Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the Hotel Monteleone on Royal Street in the French Quarter in New Orleans. Good morning, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevebick.com, just entertaining and interesting and profitable, hopefully, for lots of you. And I got a hands full to dive into the weekend at the three venues, particularly, and more than three, because even at Turfway has got to be included in the conversation. And we'll get as much as we can in, and I've got to get a lot of coverage today because, of course, we're back in New Orleans for 3 days for the HBPA convention, which officially starts tonight. And in terms of our coverage, officially will start when Eric Hamelbeck joins us in hour three. So last visitor of the morning will be Eric, and that'll sort of set us up into Tuesday and Wednesday. Not that we won't have some of the mainstream conversations as well. But obviously the HBPA discussion and some of the news, and I'm not going to, there's no reason because we've got tomorrow and Wednesday to go through the legalities when it comes to this latest piece of news and latest, you know, legal challenge and answer from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday. They found simply declare that to their view, HISA is constitutional. So it's basically a little bit more than 2-1 unconstitutional, and there's plenty more legal shoes to drop. Let's just put it that way. All right. So let me just slip that in, we'll get into the weeds on that over the next couple of days, undoubtedly. Although I want to talk about, and we absolutely want to visit a lot of the other issues that HBPA will convene regarding. All right, so that's my obligation fulfilled to report on Friday. It's important, but it doesn't end the wranglings. Let's put it that way. When it comes to the racing, obviously the 3-year-olds dominate discussion, and there were three really good performances at the very least, way more than three, because Forte, as the returning 2-year-old champion, making his 3-year-old debut and doing it smashingly. The Violence Son absolutely could not have returned to action with a better start to the season. Got everything in. All you had to do was, listen to Todd Pletcher afterward. Perfect. A challenge and chasing a pace and moving into it and essentially taking command and drawing off, and got a very robust figure on the speed measurements, 98 on the buyer scale, and I imagine right in line with everything else, because he did swing wide on the turn for home. So a absolute perfect return for what feels like with a ways to go, everybody declared pretty quickly Forte as your, you know, as your, oh, he's the Derby favorite. Well, was there something wrong with Practical Move's performance? Practical Move was outstanding, and frankly, how different was his effort to Forte's? Right, he performed quite similarly in his 3-year-old debut, and granted, he wasn't the returning 2-year-old champion, but he did come in, you know, as a grade 2 winner. He did win the Losail Futurity. He was already, you know, placed in the Bob Hope. And Practical Move for Tim Yakteen, who had an unbelievable weekend. Unbelievable weekend. And Practical Move was just part of it because, of course, we kept trying to call attention to that Calbred allowance, and it didn't disappoint. Kangaroo Court, a Dad's Caps, 95 buyer for his 3-year-old debut. So the Yakteen, and this is not all that he's got. He's I'm not even including the horses that have been transferred into his care. Just the horses that he brought to the party. the Calbred, Kangaroo Court, and Practical Move. Huge win for Ramon Vasquez. Actually had, going into the weekend, had spent some time and talked to Billy Castle, who's handling Ramon. It's a very nice spotlight horse for Ramon Vasquez to emerge. So we'll talk, I think we're talking to Tim Yakteen around 10:30. And it, not only, you know, did Yakteen have the big 3-year-old Saturday, turns around yesterday, and Johans, the Nyquist, wins the Baffle. So it's been, it was a pretty heady weekend, at the very least, for Tim Yakteen and the barn. This Nyquist colt winning well under Umberto Rispoli as the 3-2 favorite in the Baffle. So we'll talk to Tim at some point this morning. And the other 3-year-old race, and in fact our first guest this morning in about 10 minutes, so I don't have to go too far into the romping performance in the Gotham of Race Kane. And this violence, and by the way, speaking of which, a mammoth weekend for Hill and Dale with the two violence winners, Forte and Raise Kane, and not only those two, Dance Macabre, the Army Mule filly, winning the Here Comes the Bride. That was one of the good results on Saturday. We'll talk about the play, because it was fun. It was a fun weekend to bet. And everybody should have gotten something somewhere, right? It was a nice variety of winners. So we'll talk to Ben Colebrook. Jose Lascano with a terrific ride on Raise Kane. And, you know, you have a 14-horse field in that Gotham. You had to figure there was going to be plenty of pace. And there was also the unfortunate circumstance, and I haven't had a chance to reach out to Andy Simoff. Felt just awful for Andy and the circumstances that found How Great Is Nate stumbling and pitching Juan Acosta onto the ground and running loose. And to be fair, it really didn't seem, I should probably watch it another, I think I watched it right after And then watch the replay once. Probably should look at it again. I don't think that anybody was badly compromised by the loose horse. He got to the front and, you know, helped actually spread the field out, in essence, by, you know, it's funny how fast they run on the front end when they don't have 118 pounds on them. But no, that was too bad, because you don't mind competing, coming in undefeated and getting beat. And Recruiter, you know, same thing, came in 4-for-4 and got beat. But you don't want it to happen that way. So in the meantime, Jose Lascano with a terrific ride, and Ben Colebrook with a horse that gives indications that he'll stretch out. And we'll talk to Ben about his plan going forward, because he's got one. He's already, yeah, he's told Dave Greinich that they expect to come back either in the bluegrass or in the wood. And, of course, you know, Ben is Keeneland-based, has been, and there's actually, you know, see how the fields shape up, but you do have the Grade 1, Grade 2 disaster that the Graded State Committee kind of foisted on Naira and the wood, and then, you know, you'll see how the fields shape up. So Ben, you know, could run out of his own stall at Keeneland with Ray's Cane, out of a LDK mare, Lemon Bell. Rock Ridge Thoroughbreds bred this one, and Andrew and Rainier Warren, the owners of Ray's Cane. And by the way, fabulous. Andy Serling, Ray's Cane right on top. Andy really sniffed him out based on kind of a, what as he calls, you know, kind of dirtied up, kind of a muddled looking form that was easy to overlook. Slip Mahoney came from the clouds to get second, and that was interesting because he really hadn't been that far back since his sprinting debut in his first start. So certainly an okay, you know, an okay second here in the Gotham in his Graded Stake debut. General Banker as Nick Tamaro. I mean, if you found Ray's Cane, you certainly were using Slip Mahoney somewhere. If you found Ray's Cane, and I think Andy gave out the exact one too, but Nick Tamaro said General Banker, put him underneath, clunk up style, what we referred to as the reverse tri-key horse, and 30-1, so he's got another Graded Stake placement. That's his third straight. It's great. Third in the Withers, third in the Jerome, and now third in the Gotham. So, happy for Jimmy Ferraro and Seacoast. So, and you know who ran very well? It was Iron Clover. If you look at the chart, you'll notice the superfecta, Ray's Cane, ninth after a half, Slip Mahoney, 13th after a half, which ostensibly is last. General Banker, 12th after a half. But Iron Clover was third early and third throughout and then second and then just, you know, obviously Ray's Cane ran off. But still, he was the only horse that was close to the pace that stayed on. So very strong effort. And there's Cox, some talk about, and we'll probably, you know, we'll see Marshall Graham in Vegas starting on Wednesday, on Thursday. But they're thinking Bayshore. They're thinking keeping him short. But he ran very well. That was a courageous performance. Shitabuti, the Chad Brown, the 5-1, and there was plenty of reason. I used both Chads getting started in that cross country, and both of the pick fives paid well and had, you know, tricky horses to find. But winner there for Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. And then there was Little Vic in the Tom Fool, who was absolutely usable and ran very well. part of the two of them, Shidibuti and Little Vic, coupling with Practical Move for a magical Saturday for Cool Moore's Practical Joke. Undoubtedly, we'll talk Practical Joke with Sid on Wednesday, because that was a spectacle for the young stallion. And you know, it was funny, as part of the recapping, when you look at the weekend, one thing that was notable was how many different prominent racing connections were the breeders of winners over the weekend. And of course, speaking of Practical Joke, it starts with Act Naughty, the Chad Brown trainee, a horse that Chad and the head of Plains, one of Sal Kuman's groups, they co-bred Practical Move using one of the Practical Joke seasons. And very, very nice owners. I actually was lucky enough and appreciate being asked to present the trophy for the San Felipe, and got to meet the Amistoys. They're from New Mexico, and the quarter horse people, and this is their first foray into thoroughbreds. And what a foray it is. Practical, it's pretty funny. I mean, in fact, Mr. Amistoy said to me, we got some points for the Derby. Do we have enough? I said, yes, you do, Mr. Amistoy. you do. You'll stay healthy. You get through the Santa Anita Derby. Yes. And I kidded him. I said, and it's better than the All-American Futurity. And that's not fair, because the All-American is something special, but I think they're going to enjoy their experience going forward. Very nice. Their son with them as well. So somebody had he was trotting around with a bottle of Woodford that I'm not, were they a sponsor of the, I'm not sure if they were a sponsor, were they maybe a sponsor of the San Felipe? I didn't notice that. Anyway, Practical Joke with just a fabulous weekend. On that theme about other prominent breeders, Vinnie Viola and the St. Elias, they bred both that dude in Colorado that the Wyckoffs have that won the Colonel Liam, and they also bred Dance Macabre. So the early season, if you're keeping tabs already, make a mental note. St. Elias as a breeder, because there's two that they're not campaigning. There was also, how about Value Engineering? Value Engineering wins the McDarmida, and Mike, you just, you know what? I'm not somebody who uses blanket horses, just because, oh, you got to use Hyrad. You can't leave out. I'm not a big believer in that. But I think it's getting to the point where you just simply can't leave Mike Maker off those tickets. It's unbelievable. If you you look in one direction and he gets you in the other direction. It's amazing. I was willing. I was willing to use, and it's funny, I've got all three checkmarked, so I was cognizant on my own, my own note-taking, I was cognizant. I picked Bemis Boy, who did nothing, did not lift a hoof, and Value Engineering, and I used Wicked Fast, and I didn't use, unbelievable, it's crazy, it's just crazy. I got to get to Ben Colebrook, but I don't want to leave out. So anyway, that was part of my storyline, was that I noticed all these racing connections that had bred winners that other people are campaigning, which is kind of fun. I do want to slip in some more of the Gulfstream action, and I'm just checking. I reached out to Michael Yates, and I didn't get a chance to tweet it on Saturday, or even yesterday, now that I think about it. But if those of you that were listening to the replay, you may have heard Mike Welch, when we talked about the Devona Dale, you might have heard Mike Welch say, you know, Darth Vader is working fabulous. And if you're looking for a horse to include at a big price that's working great, coming into the race, et cetera, et cetera, Darth Vader. Yeah. Unbelievable job by Mike. Just fabulous to throw that in. And I know for a fact that at the very least, I mean, I used her as a value play, and at the very least, our friend Vince the Stevedore, Vince texted me during the day, and he said, who was it that mentioned Darth Vader, because I used her in my double, and he scored. So that's just one person. So whenever those little people score, so great job by Mike Welch to feature Darth Vader, and excited and happy for Michael Yates to win a race like the Devona Dale. And that's his first graded stake. I mean, he's won plenty of particularly sire stake type races, and you know, Florida. Got a lot of Florida breds, operates out of Ocala, and plenty of nice wins. But this is next level when you win a race like the Devona Dale. And 47-1, longest shot on the board, which was silly. It just happens that way. And wasn't even a huge field. It was an 8-horse field. Obviously, the disappointments here, undervalued asset kind of chased. She was the second choice. Red Carpet Ready was right up on the pace, but Darth Vader never left her side and hounded her. And Red Carpet Ready, you know, started to, you know, run out of steam in the stretch. Darth Vader drew away. Guns and Graces came running for Chad, the other Chad horse that was 28-1 to be second. I mean, beaten five lengths. Infinite Diamond, who I thought might be a little fun to use, got bet. To co-third choice, or actually co-second choice, but Leave No Trace, and Phil Serpy trying to figure out what went on with her. He thinks there is something amiss, but she was doing great coming in. So hope that there's nothing. That's tough. You come out of the Breeders' Cup, and you know the. The great season that she had, and that's not, you know, that's the worst case scenario, obviously. Ben Colbrook is going to join us, and he's joining us now. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be able to call you.
Yeah, I like to talk to you, Steve. That means you won a big race. I like to talk to you.
Well,
it's been too long.
Exactly, exactly. I wasn't going to say it, but
no, it is.
We did the other day. What was it with Andy? We did have a nice limousine liberal aside with Andy the other day. So it's not like you've been forgotten.
I get it.
Well, this was exciting, and you know, the whole build up to the Gotham with 14 horses that figured into the whole storyline. And what were your thoughts? You felt like this was a horse that was kind of obscured by some bad luck and some circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, just I don't know, bad luck, just running. Just running over the wrong surface, I think, the time before. But if you look at all his other races, you know, there's really, he never has run a bad race. And I like the cutting back to one turn after having some two turn experience. with so much speed in the race, it looked like he was gonna be running late, which he was. You know, and Jose, you know, rode a great race, and it all worked out. But I did, in the big field, kind of, I mean, there was no monsters in there. It's probably why it was such a big field. But the big field, I thought, could it be to his advantage because he's such a laid back, you know, kind of do whatever the rider asks of him. And he's a very handy horse in a race. So I thought that might set up well for him because, you know, he'd be able to hit the gaps and you know, find his stride. And he was able to do that
In a big way. And part of it should also be noted that, you know, that actually is a running style that suits Jose Lascano.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that's that was the other thing. I was struggling to find a rider, and then Linda Rice's horse, Arctic Arrogance, or I think it was
yep.
his name.
Yep.
He got sick, and Jose became open. So Kevin, his agent, called me, and it was like, man, this is too good to be true. So we were going to go anyway, but you know, getting Lascano for that type of, you know, with the type of style that the horse had, it was like, you know, hand in a glove type of thing.
Yeah, big time. And then, of course, circumstance throws a bit of a monkey wrench with how great is Nate, you know, dropping Acosta off the opening. And in an elongated sprint like this anyway, being in Marty McGee's outside open air box where the air is fresh and clear, being outside is actually very advantageous. You've got the whole backstretch to avoid trouble and set up shop.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when we drew the outside post, I was even happier. You know, I just didn't want to draw inside with all that speed. You know, because he does break. The horse always breaks well, but then he just kind of, you know, and he's a little bit lackadaisical. You know, like his first race was, you know, if you look at it on paper, it was a terrible race, but he didn't, when he came back, it was like he didn't even gallop. You know, he was just didn't know what was going on, didn't really get racing, you know. And then, so, I mean, I think, yeah, exactly. With that outside post and just nothing in his, not as strong as fast where he could kind of run down the backside and find his spot. And, you know, when the running started, he could get out and go.
Well, and it seemed like it was happening, you know, to a perfect scenario and to the kind of plan you laid out. And then he was checked up a little bit, but he proved pretty nimble and got right back into stride.
Yeah, he's not a real big horse, and that's probably one of his biggest attributes is that he's you know, he can kind of get going and start and stop, you know, where like a big horse, you know, if you get checked, you lose your momentum type of freight train type thing, you know, where he's kind of a little lighter on his feet and more agile. And, you know, he was able to just check and get right back going. I mean, he had to tap the brakes a little bit on that horse. And then, he got a seam and got out. And, I mean, when he got daylight out of him, he really took off.
Well, it takes off, and not only does he, you know, negotiate around the loose how great is Nate, but then he just draws off. And what, you know, what then comes into play, it's not just a question of, oh, how much is he going to win by? You know, now it's like, well, let's see him gallop out here, mile and a 16th, mile and an 8th. And as I mentioned earlier this morning, by violence, out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare, and you're watching, you know, how he comes back and how he pulls up, and you realize, all right, we're going to, you know, get back to two turning, and there's just unlimited upside going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he needs necessarily one turn. I just think all the races that he ran in were just kind of paceless races, or, you know, both at Turfway, really. I mean, Wesley got loose on the lead and won, and his horse was very impressive. And Brad's same type of thing. And the fairgrounds, you know, where the, you know, the internal fractions weren't, you know, they weren't fast enough for him to really close into. So I think going forward, I mean, I think obviously we've got the one turn in the back. You know, we know we can do that. But I think two turns was well within his wheelhouse, you know, with these races as we're going forward. I think that, you know, the Derby preps will have, you know, there'll be enough pace in there to, you know, that could set up for him, you know, and just make that one run. you know, early on in the season, horses 2, turn, and 3, or, you know, late 2-year-olds. I think, you know, there's some horses that just have that tactical speed and get out there and they get left alone, and it's tough. But I think going forward with everybody, you know, trying to make the Derby, these races, you know, there's always pace in them. I mean, you look at last year's Derby, obviously, and, you know, the way it shook out. I mean, you know, there can be a pace collapse, you know, in some years.
Well, this provides, and I even kind of floated this in the last 10 minutes talking about what lies ahead, because you win over the surface at Aqueduct and the Wood Memorial lies ahead. But as you told Dave Grenning, there's the option of running out of your own stall at Keeneland. And, of course, he broke his maiden going 7/8 at Keeneland. So there's plenty of speculation that might just be easier to stay at home.
Yeah, you know, obviously we're going to nominate to both races. I mean, he's nominated to the Bluegrass already, and we'll nominate to the Wood. And, you know, I think it would have to be that the Wood just is shaping up extremely, you know, much, much easier spot for us to kind of leave our own backyard. But, you know, if one race, I mean, if the Wood is obviously an easier spot, then we'll have to really strongly consider it. But sounds like what I'm hearing from Todd is Forte is going to stay in Florida. I kind of thought maybe that he might be a Bluegrass contender since he's got so much experience on the track at Keeneland. But
true.
If he stays south, you know, I mean, there'll be some, obviously the Bluegrass is going to be a good race, I'm sure. But we'll just sit back and wait, and, you know, we don't have to make a decision now. We're still just kind of enjoying, you know, what happened Saturday still. Yeah,
exactly. As well you should. Talk about the Warrens, Andrew and Rainia, and picking this horse out and some of the backstory.
Well, you know, Dr. Greg Fox, and Patty Miller select some of the horse, these horses for Andrew and Rainia. And Dr. Fox is how I met Andrew. You know, and he's a big part of it. He's, you know, around all the time and kind of, you know, serves as kind of a pseudo racing manager for Andrew, at least with my horses. And, no, I mean, it's been a great, he's, you know, got some exciting 3-year-olds. It's kind of taken a while for it to all come to fruition because, you know, we've had some horses that didn't really, you know, never gone through the program. And now these are the first batch that I've gotten kind of that, you know, I got as 2-year-olds. You know, a lot of them were kind of retreads or horses that had issues that have kind of, you know, been lost in the shuffle, but he's got some exciting prospects going forward. You know, obviously Scooby Quando and Ray's Kane, and then, you know, there's some other ones that haven't run yet that look like they've got some ability as well. So he's, you know, it's, you know, hopefully he's, you know, be around for, he's a young guy and he loves his horses. So it's an exciting time.
We'll get to Scooby Quando, who kind of was held up, it seemed, in the Battaglia, and the winner got the jump on him. But looking at Ray's Kane and the sales record, was bought as a yearling for $180,000, and then RNA'd at OBS. Was a pinhook prospect that didn't sell?
Well, not really. I think he bought him to race initially. And, you know, I think, you know, he, as everything goes in this industry, you know, it's just so expensive to keep a big racing stable. So I think Andrew kind of floated the idea around to sell some of them at OBS if they brought, you know, if he could, you know, show a profit or make some money. It was kind of just a, you know, tip your toe in the water type deal. And luckily, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't get sold. And, you know, he got to keep him, and, you know, it's all turned out to be great. But, you know, I think that was it. It wasn't bought to be a pinhook, but I think, you know, it was just one of those things where they kind of were just testing the waters a little bit, but ended up keeping him, and it ended up being, you know, very, very good that he kept him, and now he's got a horse on the Derby trail.
Unbelievable. And and actually the RNA number was 65,000. So this,
yeah, I don't know what happened. I think there was a story. I mean, he vetted, he was sound and everything, but something, I think he just kind of breeze bad. Like I said, he's so laid back.
Unbelievable.
He just wouldn't be a two-year-old sale type to me. You know, he's not.
Unbelievable.
He is quick. He can be quick, but he just, I think he's so lackadaisical, he might have just, you know, not the penny hadn't dropped yet with him at that point.
Amazing. Virtually anybody could have taken this one home. The Raise Kane story a little bit, and is there some tie? What's the name? Do we know about the name?
I don't know where the name came from. Because he's not like, you know, I guess Raise Kane's kind of wild and whatever, but he's the opposite of that. So I guess, you know, he doesn't live up to his namesake anyway as far as his personality. He's like the most laid back.
Nice.
Horse. You know, he eats and he sleeps and he trains, and that's about all he does. He's you know, he's such a mild-mannered horse. He's great to be around, and, you know, he's, you know, you ship him wherever we've taken him so far. He just, you know, handles everything easy and, you know, paddock saddle, and he's good. So that's all good attributes for a three-year-old colt, you know, this time of year, because obviously these, you know, these races get, you know, it's these big days. It's a, you know, you never know who's gonna kind of melt down.
Fair point. And he's now, you know, he's now made trips and basically visited five different racetracks, as it happens: Churchill, Keeneland, Fairgrounds, Turfway, and Aqueduct. So and he's also now dealt with a wet seal track, synthetic, and both Churchill and Keeneland's main track. So it's been a good experience. Just looking, I should mention too, on the breeding side, this is a very nice female family, of course. The Dam, sister of Unrivaled Bell. Lemon Bell herself, a one-time winner in four starts, but Unrivaled Bell, and the, you know, the both of them out of Queenie Bell. This is a nice family. So feels like a terrific story in the making. And I'm just curious who Chad had that Dam for Buzz Schwartz. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she's got. She has got what's coming behind. There actually is a full sib, but this one clearly is the best that she's produced so far. Coming in behind, there's a Frosted Colt, and she's already had her baby. She's had a Constitution Colt as well. She didn't have a baby in 22. So a Frosted and a Constitution coming up behind. And I assume Rock Ridge still has the mare. You mentioned Scooby Quando. And did I have it right? You basically got pinned down a little bit. And
yeah, I just didn't get a great trip.
Yeah.
I mean, he only got to run about maybe 3/16 a quarter of a mile. But, you know, it might be one of those things that's a blessing in disguise, because it wasn't a hard race. If we do come back to in the Ruby, it's only 3 weeks spacing. So, you know, we didn't want a hard race, obviously, but we wanted to win. But, I mean, you know, he's actually, I mean, I think he's a very, very nice horse. You know, obviously he broke his maiden in a stake, but, you know, that, I think he's going to be better going two turns. I think the dirt could be a possible ability for him. And I certainly think, you know, with the female family, I think the grass is also an option. So he's an exciting horse going forward, because he's, you know, he's very athletic. He's a beautiful moving horse, and he's another horse, you know, that has a good mind. And, you know, it's a pleasure to have two horses like that in the barn.
He this was only his third start, as you mentioned, and you started him in the preview, which was ambitious right off the get-go. And you know, he certainly bred to be a nice horse. Uncle Mo out of that German mare Daveron, who I want to say was a
Team Valor.
Team Valor, yeah, absolutely.
Because Christoph had her when she first came over from Germany.
Oh, there
when
you
I worked
go.
For Christoph.
And there you go.
She ended up going to Grand Motion, and she was a good filly, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah,
she
yeah.
She won Athenia. She won some New York long turf stakes. She was good.
Well, so then you get you got some Uncle Mo lick, and then you got some stamina underneath. So Scooby Quando, move it. I mean, are you inclined to give him a dirt try instead, or what?
Well, I kind of thought, to be honest, I thought that if he won, I mean, you know, you never want to say you're going to win, but I thought he had a really good chance of winning the Battaglia, and if he had a hard race and he won the Battaglia, my thinking was going into the race that maybe we'd skip the Ruby and go for the Bluegrass and try him on the dirt and go for the Gusto, or, you know, you'd still have the Transylvania to look at Keeneland, like, or kind of those two races. Cause if he had a hard race, I didn't want to run him back in the Ruby, but, you know, the way things worked out, I mean, I think, you know, the Ruby's got to be under consideration, because he's yesterday morning, he's just, you know, he was mad. He's like, I didn't get to run. You know, you could tell that it, you know, in the test barn afterwards, he, you know, he didn't drink much water. It just wasn't a very hard race for him. So, you know, I think we'll definitely consider the Ruby. And, if we feel like, you know, he does need a little bit more time, there's, you know, the two races that I mentioned at Keeneland, you know, obviously, depending on what Raise Cane does, that could, you know, change things if we did decide to go, you know, into the Bluegrass. But I think if, you know, today I'm thinking more Jeff Ruby, but, you know, as everything, things change from day to day with horses.
Can I make a kind of a offbeat, wacky suggestion?
What's that?
The Louisiana Derby. Mile and three sixteenths.
There you go. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, those are all good options, you know. But I probably wouldn't really want to ship him, you know, because, you know, I think I'd rather keep him kind of locally, you know, since he is kind of stringing together a bunch of races. You know, he got a little bit late started, so we're kind of throwing a lot at him, obviously. But he seems to be handling it great, so.
All right. Well, I mile and three sixteenths. It seems like he's built for that, and big stretch
not
run.
A crazy option. It's not a crazy thought for sure.
1,308 feet.
Yep, that's right. He gets blocked, and at least he'll have some room to kind of run him down. I wish we had a longer stretch at Turfway.
Yeah,
on Saturday.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he was going to get to Congruent. That was a nice performance.
Either. I mean, I think that horse ran a huge race. Yeah. I don't know if we were winning anyway, but I think if we switch trips, we definitely win. But, you know, that's a whole different.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
That's a whole different thing. But no, that horse ran a monster race. I mean, he kind of had. You know, if you look at his form, he'd had some good, you know, good back class, and, you know, just kind of been running in, you know, tough races. But he certainly loved the synthetic, and I think you see that sometimes when horses get on it, they just kind of run these races that, you know, kind of wow you.
Well, that and Antonio Sano, who manages to come up with them. Simplification last year, and I don't know if you saw that, you know, the number was late getting produced. 91 buyer for the winner, so I'm guessing you got beat by what, three and a half?
Yeah,
got probably an 86 probably.
We'll take it.
Well, you'll take this graded stake win, certainly. And
yes, we will. Hard to get and getting harder and harder all the time.
Well, first in 4 years, I'm just noticing, which shocks me.
You know, it's just kind of been it goes in cycles. I had a couple of really good years where I had a lot of good horses, and it's just kind of, for whatever reason, you know, you just haven't had the same stock. And, you know, the big barns. How tough Kentucky Racing's gotten right now. But it's just tough, you know, when you're running against, you know, these guys with, you know, got a couple hundred horses. They do a great job, and they've got the horses ready every week and ready to roll. So, I mean, these things are getting harder and harder to win, but we're just happy that we're back in the win column with one, because, you know, that's what it's all about, races like that. And, you know, that's what the game's built around, the big days and the big races. And you got to keep keep your name out there by winning them. So we're happy to do that. We got it done.
Well, I'm happy that I got to call you and celebrate not just the win, because the runner-up effort for Scooby Kwando. And there's a story here to be told on the sales side. Are you going to be at OBS?
I am on the fence. I'm not sure. You know, I'd like to go down there, but at the same time, you know, it's hard to get away this time of year with, you know, everything going on. I got a bunch of 2-year-olds in, and, you know, we're cranking up for Keeneland. You know, that's kind of what that's our
yeah.
Our Saratoga, you know, for
yes.
The guys based here, you know, we're really, we, you know, so I probably won't go, to be honest, but it's hard, you know, it's a sale you need to be at, but unfortunately,
well,
I'm probably going to stay home.
Well, you know what, if Dr. Fox and Patty Miller are picking out Scooby Kwandos and Raise Canes, you don't need to be there.
No, I sure don't. I need to stay home. Yeah. That's for sure.
Let them handle that. All right. So tell them
exactly.
You're gonna have to hook me up, because I want them to come. I'll be there all week, so I want to get a segment in, because these are two purchases in the 150 to 180 range, and that's a sweet spot. And to have two,
I agree.
Right, yeah, two I Derby agree. Horses.
I think yeah, for sure. I think you know that's the spot of the sales that if I was you know if I had my you know but that's the kind of where I would go is anything under 200. You know, because then if you make a mistake or a horse doesn't work out, you know, you can live with it. But when, you know, you buy these things for $800,000 or $900,000, you know, I've had a few really expensive horses in the barn that people bought. It's just such a letdown, and it kind of takes the wind out of everybody's sails when you quote unquote make a big mistake like that. I just think if you buy five, I mean, what's better, five for, you know, around 200 or one for a million? I'll take the five any day of the week.
There you go.
Right. I know they're expensive to train, but when you're talking about spending $1 million, you know, I don't think the training probably isn't that, you know, significant. If an individual's got $1 million to spend on horses, they can, you know, probably afford to keep them in training. And the purse structures nowadays, I mean, you know, these horses, even if they're, you know, if they're a, you know, nice allowance horse, they can pay their way, and they can, you know, get out on the purchase price and make a little money, even if they're not, you know, that elite horse, you know. So that's the good news for the industry, at least in Kentucky, is, you know, these purses are sustainable for owners, you know, because for so long, you know, the cost of training was, you know, if you won a race, you didn't even pay for, you know, your whole year's training bill. And if you won a nice maiden special weight, you know, you got, you know, $30,000 or, you know, $26,000, or even at Turfway, you know, we got down to under 20 for a maiden special weight. I mean, it was tough to convince owners to invest when the purse structure is so bad. But now it's great, and I could really see these people, you know, the commercial breeders maybe start to keep more in the barn to race, because it's a viable option now to make it profitable.
No doubt. And basically, with the circuit, the circle is complete, and between Ellis and Turfway filling in the gaps, and then some, Kentucky Downs, for those that on the grass side, the numbers
it's a great circuit,
yep.
And, you know, I mean, it's the only problem is probably stall space now.
It's, yeah.
You know, it's getting tough for guys. I'm lucky enough to be at Keeneland, but I know that you know, there's a waiting list to get in here, and probably waiting list to get in all these, you know, tracks and training centers in the state, because it's everybody wants to be here, and it's great. And the, you know, the state of Kentucky, it's obviously our signature industry, and I think we're doing a better job of educating, you know, the state residents of how important it is, and we need to continue to do that. But it's great right now.
Colebrook Stable on Twitter, Ben Colebrook. Congratulations, great weekend, and obviously looking ahead, we'll be talking again soon.
Hope to talk to you soon. I love talking to you, like I said.
I love it. Ben, thanks so much. Well done.
All right, thank you.
Ben Colebrook, and great for him to have a pair of horses like this. You know, he's had his share, and this is a great kind of resurgent season. happy for him. And I'm anxious to hear the story because of Dr. Fox and of course, Patty Miller, with the heart size measurements. I should know that at the top of my head. Either way, Ed Mosier is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the Santa Anita handicap. And there he is. Ed, good morning. Congratulations to you and your brother.
Thank you.
You were so great after this win. You turned to Mike Willman and he asked you the first question. You know, what were you thinking? I think we brought the best horse, and boy, it proved out.
Yeah, he's been like a great horse for us, and he tries hard every single time, and it's great to finally run the Grade One. That's his ninth Grade One he's ran in.
Obviously you got a lot of things that were going on here, and a big part of the story is Kent DeSormo and his third big cap, and it comes at a time that means a lot to him and his career, and he could not have made better choices on better timing than he did in this race on Saturday.
He's always been like a Hall of Fame rider. I've actually only won two Grade Ones in my life, and he's been on both of them. And probably both of them wouldn't have won without him.
Talk a little bit about how you were approaching this, and stylistically with him, he some of his best races. He'd only won three times coming in, and it being on or near the lead has been valuable to him, but that seemed like a difficult way to approach this race.
Yeah, we actually, our plan going in there was, let him run out of the gate aggressively, and if he got the lead, we thought that'd be really good, but we didn't want to kill it. Just keep sending if he's not going to make the lead. And so obviously Kent made the right decision just to lay off, and it worked out good.
He got early position and then quickly realized what was going on. And interestingly, the two Bafferts, the Funded, who went off favored, a little under 3-2, and Hopper, who, I tell you, made some impression in the paddock. He was a head taller than every other horse. And they went in 46 for the half, Ed. I mean, you had to be happy when that number went up and you saw where you were.
I like the pace up front. I don't know if you saw down the backside. It looks like he got a little uncomfortable and where he was, and he's really never ever done that. He's always like just been pure racehorse. And I thought that was a little weird. Kent told me that he kind of clipped heels the horse next to him. And he told me the same thing. He got in a spot. He wasn't really liking it. And so he just moved out a little bit and they just took hold a bit again. And just ran hard, from the 3/8 pole home. So
now, and certainly at the wire, and I know that they waited for a photo, but I thought it was pretty clear that he had the head forged in front.
I thought he'd won. I know the photo was up there a long time. It started bothering me because I thought maybe I saw something that wasn't there. But yeah, I thought he'd won at the wire.
14-1 too, and gotta talk about a story, and you brought it up, and I don't know if it was with Brad Free or Steve Anderson, or might have been with Willman, but we talked about going into Saturday all week up at Clocker's Corner, the situation with the training, Ed, where everybody on track was hamstrung in terms of having to either jog or lightly gallop into the race, and you were comfortable, back up at an SF, able to work right away and just work on a daily basis. And of course, Proxy finishes, you know, a fast closing second here. And same thing for Mike Stidham at Fairgrounds. They trained uninterrupted.
Yeah, my brother and I both thought that Proxy was probably going to be the tough horse in the race. You know, just because number one, he's a really good horse, and I didn't really watch him that close in the Pegasus, but I heard he got in some trouble.
Yeah,
and was closing good late. So, yeah. So my brother and I thought that was probably the tough. I mean, Defundo's a great horse. We were actually stabled next to him at Gulfstream, and so I watched him for four mornings in a row. And he is a very nice looking horse, and he's a very good horse. No doubt about it. And it didn't bother me that they couldn't train in Southern California, though.
One of the advantages in this case of coming in from out of town, and it's not like you had to have a travail the way Joe Sharp did in terms of bringing Scarlet Fusion into town and not being allowed to run, was a complete disaster. Talk a little bit for you and Steve, a couple of storylines, Ed. Obviously buying a ready-made horse and going on with him, that's part of the story. And then, you know, there's your long, successful career and winning a race like this and adding it to the resume.
You know, probably, you know, to win any big race in California, I was never really thought about it before, but I was probably that's probably the one race I'd want to win. That's probably the most classic race in California, even though it's not the biggest purse anymore. I think it used to be, but anyway, it's, you know, Sandy the Handicap's really the premier race in California. It has been in the past. And yeah, so it was a great win. Great.
I can tell that you sound tickled and you could see on Saturday that, you know, the realization that you win a big cap. It's funny. I've had the same kind of reaction or follow up. John Sadler, when he won his first, it meant so much to him. You know, growing up in and around Southern California racing, he talked about it, and really everybody that you know, particularly is West Coast oriented. You grow up and this is the feature race every year. And it's historic. I mean, it has a cachet that, you know, that money can't buy.
Yeah. The Seabiscuit race.
There you go. There it is. And in terms of picking this horse out, and I remember talking to Doug Anderson when he won the Iowa Derby. And he goes through the ring, and your brother picks him out. Talk about, you know, the buying him and kind of you know, turning him into a, you know, into a handicap division horse.
Yeah, I wasn't really involved in buying. You know, my brother did that on his own. He had been trying to buy horses, and every time he looked at them, I told him they weren't worth it. It was too much money, and so finally he decided, I'm not going to talk to me anymore. he called me and told me, he says, I got you one. He says, now we got to go. And I said, what do you got? And he said, I bought one for $400,000 at the sale. I said, you're kidding me. And he said, that's what it is. And he said, it just won the Iowa Derby. And he said, I had like a 90 buyer or something. And back in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, one there. How's he going to win a stake in Southern California? That's what I was trying to figure it out. I felt like he probably won and not that tough a race in Iowa. You know, how's he going to come out there and compete with Medina Spirit and all those horses that were, you know, running in Southern California at the time? But I'll tell you who was higher on the horse than anybody was Kent Disromo.
Amazing.
Yeah, I liked the horse when he came in. He was skinny when he came in, but I'm sure it's probably because he ran the Iowa Derby, went to Keeneland, shipped across the country, you know. So I think that's probably why. I'm sure he looked good when he won at Iowa. So he was kind of tired and back in my mind, I'm thinking, so he might need a break. That's what I was thinking, you know. And after a few, after not too much longer, he was like eating really good and he was getting stronger like every day. And, but still, I'm thinking, where are we going to run this horse, you know? And so I had the Stromer working one day. And he came back and said, where'd you get this horse? And I said, my brother got him at the sale in Keeneland. He said, how much he paid for him? I said, $425,000. And he looked at me and said, that's a steal. He says, worst scenario, this horse wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I swear to God, that's what I looked at him like, are you freaking crazy, you know? And so I went to Tony Maddows and I told him what Kent DeStromo just told me. And he said, seriously? And I said, yeah. I said, does he always say shit like that? And he said, he's not like that. He said, he must like that horse. So he went, Maddows went and talked to him. He came back to me and he said, yeah, no, he thinks that horse is great. So now all of a sudden, maybe I got a good horse. So, and because he did work good, but he didn't work super fast or anything. And so then we worked him, we ran him, and he was on the lead and on the turf, but he still was kind of a tired. He was still a little weak, and he wasn't strong yet. And actually was on the lead. I think he didn't get beat that far.
No.
And DeStromo came back and said, he said, this horse, take the blinkers off. He said, he made like four runs at him. And he said, he just didn't relax. He said, this horse, he was still real high on him. So that's the way that went.
And I'm just looking, you tried the La Jolla with him and then the blinkers come off and you've gone on strictly with the dirt. And, he's acquitted himself. He had acquitted himself regularly quite well at a mile and a quarter, even though he hadn't had anything better than the third. I mean, it was pretty clear that classic distance was going to be okay for him. He's a Shackleford. He's out of a Marquetry mare, Rosie's Ransom. And actually, the original owners were the breeders, the Kerbers. Somebody wrote to me, Ed, when I put up the note about the buyer yesterday, and they said they wondered if this was Shackleford's first Grade One winner at a mile and a quarter, and I'm sure that that's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and he's got that.
My first one.
there you go. He's got of course Shackleford's exported, but he's got that big blaze on him. I mean, it just flashy and handsome.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like that when every time there's a good horse around, but so many people come to me and say, I love that horse. I don't know, maybe every time there's a good horse, people tell the people I have him, I don't like that horse. But so many people say, and he's not even winning races. He just keeps running third. And everybody said, I love that horse. I mean, I love the way he looks. And I don't know. So he's a cool horse. And I tell everybody, like when he's walking over to the paddock, he like sticks out because he's like the light chestnut with the bald face, and all the rest of them are like bays and not a lot of light on him. And he's like, I was at Pegasus, and they were coming over from the backside to the paddock, and they started the quarter pole, and they're walking down. So I was standing on the track by the paddock, and the whole, the whole crew was coming across, and he just stuck out. And even though he was like the 11 hole, I mean, you could tell exactly which one was him, and all the rest of them were like bays, and they're all walking along, and he's proud, he's a really good horse. He's really talented, and he's really, really talented, and really, really tries hard, which is a really good combination.
Well, and he's still just a 5 year old, and he's gelded, so he's going to continue to win fans and give the fans an opportunity to enjoy him going forward. And I got to say, Ed, yeah, they're running the Breeders' Cup Classic on that track in November.
Yeah, that's really, really want to be there this year.
So everything now you look at the calendar and you just back it up from there.
Yeah, last year we ran too many races, but I mean, honestly, he was tired after the Pegasus last year. Never was the same after that, even though he won the Californian after that. I was about ready to turn him out after the Pegasus, but then we ran, and I think he ran like third in the San Anita Handicap, and so I just ran one more time. Well, then he won, but he was tired, and he just didn't have the excitement that he had, you know, after the Pegasus, and I couldn't get him back to where he was, and so, you know, then we were still thinking Breeders' Cup Classic, because he's still running pretty good, you know, and so when he ran bad in the Pegasus, or in the Pacific Classic, you know, I told my brother, I said, we gotta turn him out, so we turned him out and gave him a break. There was nothing wrong with him, he just wasn't sharp, you know. And
yeah,
we took him to our farm in Galt, California, and he was in a grass paddock for wasn't a solid night, but in a grass paddock for 2 months. And first day he got out there, he was just happy as could be. I mean, he loved it. I mean, he's eating grass all day long, and when we brought him back in, he just was a good horse again, really strong and happy. He's been, you know, that's his third race now since he came back in, and he's actually gotten even better every time he's ran. He's putting on more weight, and I told my brother on Saturday, it's the best he's ever looked since we had him.
Well, probably then a little bit of a lighter schedule leading up to another try in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He got the last significant check at Del Mar 2 years ago, so it wouldn't be his first visit in, with all the purple bunting. So delighted on that front. Ed, it had the potential to be an even more special day because you brought Chase the Chaos down. You'd been kind of considering different things coming out of the El Camino Real. I did talk to you after the race and ask you your thoughts. You've had another 48 hours to consider. What's your reaction to Chase the Chaos out of the San Felipe?
I obviously didn't run like I was from, but you know, it's a new surface and actually a track where it's not real, closers don't do really well at San Diego to start with, and a real tough race. So there's a lot of things that didn't go that good, but I still like that horse a lot. And this next race should be a lot better fit for him. It's a California Derby on April 29th at Golden Gate Field. So I'll be back on synthetic. And I'll like him in that race, I'm sure, because he's a really, really nice horse. He's good looking, and he can run.
We celebrated with you talking about him, I mean, he didn't run badly, but all you have to do is kind of look at the chart. Really, the only horse that closed was Skinner. John's horse. And
yeah, he's right next. The last part, he just didn't have it, and I usually didn't beat him up or anything. He just kind of sat on, let him finish in. But yeah, he'll look a lot better on the synthetic up there, I know. Yeah. He bred top and bottom for turf, so maybe that's why he runs good on synthetic too.
There you go. Well, you got plenty to look forward to with the Chase the Chaos as well, and he's a gelding, so there aren't assignments that you're not like you're building a resume with him. You can just have fun and enjoy that ride. Ed, I think we're losing you on the phone a little bit.
No, okay, good.
You broke up a tiny bit when we were talking chaos and coming out of that race, but a very special Saturday for you and your brother Steve. Congratulations, and it feels like there's a big story here as the year goes on with stiletto boy, and delighted for you.
Thank you.
Ed Moger, everybody, and he and brother Steve pull the proverbial rabbit out of the hat. $400,000 for a ready-made horse. And listen, everybody did well here. The Kerbers and Doug Anderson did well. They sold at the top coming out of that Iowa Derby. And you know, that Iowa Derby, because when I got curious when Ed mentioned that, wondering about what kind of a race it might have been, that there was nothing wrong with that running of the Iowa Derby. Superstock was in there, who had won the Arkansas Derby, right? And Gagetown and Flash of Mischief was second in there, who's real nice. That's Broberg, right? Yeah, that nice Broberg sprinter. Was he second? Yeah, he was second in there behind Stiletto Boy, Flash of Mischief, Gagetown, Superstock. Nova Rags went off the favorite. How about that? After being third in the Woody Stevens. So it was a good Iowa Derby. And I remember when he won that race. It was fun to be there. And that was part of the, as we head to the break, the day was different, and it had a nice assortment between Yak Teen winning with Practical Move, and capping the day with Mosier and Kent D, what else? There was the Kilrow, and a little Red Feather with Gold Phoenix, Kaz Kimura. I tweeted up, got a great picture of him and Gold Phoenix that was his first grade one in the U.S. Yeah, it was fun. That crazy Mullins, Hector Berrios, they're complete terrors together. Quatrell, who, figured. So it was a nice, the day had a nice assortment to it. Mark Glatt had a winner, that Joe Don Looney, right? Kristen Mulhall won early on the card. A little bit of everything. Actually, I'd forgotten. I'm just noticing. Little Red Feather and D'Amato actually had won the opener. I got there after that. I got there the third was about to go. So I missed the first two, but now I'm just noticing that. Georgie Parabén won as well. I mentioned Kristen Mulhall. I already told you about when we talked later to Tim Yak Teen. Kangaroo Court. Then there was some of those middle races. Oh, D'Amato as well. That's right. D'Amato, that Cash Equity, won the allowance. Oh, one of the day's best hits. What about Mendez Mile? Very cleverly ridden. Louis Mendez brought this one back. Hadn't been seen since June. You know from Hammer for years, telling you about Louis Mendez, who has kind of struggled this meet, but bringing back a May foal that, as it happens, Rockingham Ranch had bred, speaking of that same storyline, I made the horse the best value in that maiden claiming race that looked kind of murky, and then, for whatever reason, the horse took no money. I was shocked. I think it was, 12-1 morning line? Went off at 26-1 and ran off. Very nice job taking control. Edward Rojas Fernandez, the rider. And don't know all that much about him. Had been 0-5 coming into the day at Santa Anita. Got to look into him. So anyway, the day had all kinds of interesting results. Honey Jar, you know, we caught that middle pick four and singled Honey Jar, and we had had Michael W. McCarthy join us, right? And Michael had I think we set you up for that pretty good, the Bo Hirsch runner, and she was good. Johnny had her prominent up there with Carmen Miranda, and then had to hold off running with the boys. Got a little harrowing. They went into the day hitting at 36% together in 28 mounts at the meet. Unbelievable. So it was an absolutely fabulous day. It was cold. Let's face facts. And I think it kept the crowd down a little bit. Let's take the break. Rich Migliori is next at the races back in New Orleans.